Accession number 30342, reel 13.
Why was he called Tommy Ross?
That was a name that was known up north there one time, you know, Tommy Ross and things like that.
Any other?
You get a name, you know, up north called some silly name called Tommy Ross, like the Vincenty sort of thing, you know, in South Hughes.
Were you able to go to church in Germany?
No, not in Germany, no.
Was there any, you know, in the Geneva Convention and that, where you were supposed to be allowed to, but they didn't, so you
watched? Well, they didn't come out as far as the working camp I was with that time.
So they wouldn't let you go to the local church?
No, I don't recall having gone there. We had a doctor supposed to come and see us now and again. And he was a darky, a black man. He was called Black Magic. And I remember going up to him and saying, exactly, I said, there's nothing wrong with me at all. I said, I can assure you, I said, that business. But I said, I feel as if I could do the couple of days off. No one can go and tell the Lord rubbish and all that. So he basically looked like I got a couple of days off, a bit of a rest and all that from the work. And because the work was pretty hard, yes.
Could you take us through a day in this camp, a working day? Well, when would it start? What would you do? When would it end?
Well, I say you'd walk to work.
What time?
About 3 miles.
What time in the morning you would be up at?
Oh, say probably about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. So you'd walk?
And you'd walk there and you'd get a bit of a break, probably. 3 quarters an hour, and he was filling up the castles on his truck and doing it all day long.
So what were you actually doing though? You were in a railway yard?
On the railway, and the trains was coming in. Uh-huh. We were shoving the coal in these things and tipping them in, and the rear, that train would go and they would come in and all that.
So it was loading the coal, was it loading the coal for the locomotive?
Yeah, that's right.
Not, it wasn't cargo, it was the actual locomotive?
Oh no, for the locomotive, the top of it.
Yeah, and all that.
And they would put water in, and of course, you would see different trains pulling in, and you could tell some of the trains were like the sort of train I was in, you know, the cattle trucks. And you could see people talking and all that, you know, trying to talk to you. And the doors must have been open one time, and I talked to some girl, photograph of her or something, and they called her Maria, or Mark, pulling in. And I waked her up, and that wasn't done about the Russians or that sort of thing. She was quite abused and things like that. And I had a bit of a crack with her or something. And I don't know what happened to her, she went on.
But she was in the area for a while?
Yeah, just for a pause by the Falkenberg station we worked, and it got took us there. I don't know what happened, of course.
Were there any other incidents, any other trains that stand out? Any other?
Any
other any other kind of trains pulling in that struck?
There was prisons with Red Cross prisoners or something like going on to different stations and you got to try to talk to them. And that, you know, it was some Germans going through and trying to talk to them a bit because, but some of them didn't want us, a bit of resentment. So and we took on a working party one time where they had bomb somewhere. Oh, it hadn't been bombed ever, this place hadn't. It never scares me. And had never been bombed for some reason. They must have left especially and they bombed that. And we had to go there to sort of sort things out a bit the best we could. And we're glad to have the sentries with us there because the sentries were protecting us from the people who had resented the fact that they had been bombed. We were actually marching in the area, and the very great had the sentence there then. And one Scots bloke, an old man, he was 40, an old man, and he thought the fact that he could speak broad Scots was not unlike the guttural tongue of the Germans, and of course some of the Germans could understand what he was saying. He was convinced that they could understand Scottish sort of thing and that, you know. And he made some joke and some wisecrack, but he didn't go a lot on. and the thought you have put the red, red, and put the hell over it. Like, didn't make anyone joke about that sort of thing. Like. But you're a Lord man, it is, like I said, it's 14. Like.
So you were loading these cold locomotives up?
Yeah.
How long would go until what time?
Just about dark, before dark, that's.
And then you'd have to march back to the camp?
March back to camp, yeah.
Would you get a meal at the
What was the meal there?
What was that?
Like I said, it was scoops, skelly or something like that, you know. Potato soup. It wasn't there.
Were there any German civilians working at the...
A lot of Russians, well, there's a lot of Germans were, but there were the drivers and things, they got the trains. And
would they talk to you? Would you be...
No, I never got a chance of talking. There was one Russian bloke there who had been a trader, and he was looking after his fellow countrymen, but he was the man in charge, and they didn't go a lot on him at all. And they were given his nickname, and... Bronze or something, they were given, some funny name were given. And he says, oh, that's not my name at all, you know. And he says, I wouldn't want to be like this, I want to be with my fellow men and all that, but he was a bit of a traitor.
So he was working for the Germans?
Working for the Germans. But of course, you see, it's all right to be critical, but when you're there and you get a chance to get a bit extra cooking and a bit better treatment, you're easily led and all that, you know. Another case, I've got to remind myself here. Yeah, myself and Sergeant Dove had to check off the bot with one of our aircraft. A guy called Machen, a Scots. Machen, he was a, he pretended to be a bit silly and things like that. And he went to one of the drivers on the train and he picked up an oil lamp and he was squirting the oil lamps and all that. Could have been laughing all that day. But he didn't know what was definitely know that sort of thing. That's one thing that sticks in your mind. And another thing I was going to tell you there. Oh yeah, when we were in a prison camp there in Germany, they took all the glass out in the summer we had seen. And you had iron bars there. And they were put back again in the winter. So you're bitterly, bitterly cold trying to keep yourself warm with your overcoat, your blankets and all that, and that, you know. Yeah. And for my Christmas dinner one time, all I got was a cup of swede, that's a turnip. That was all I got for my Christmas dinner. And everybody else got a cup of swede.
So that would have been Christmas of 43 or Christmas of 44?
Whatever it was, yeah.
Yeah.
And then another Russian, a young Russian fella, the Russians were treated very, very badly, and there's one bloke that was in charge, it was a really nasty, villainous sort of guy, this German bloke. And he used to badger this German, and this German lad, this Russian lad, decided he's going to take this fella's eye out and his fingernail. Just so far, but he was on. And let his fingernail grow and grow and grow. And he was going to take this guy's out with his fingernail. But what they used to have to do was have to use what they call tangas. Tangas was like you've got a big chisel and you said put a pincher holding it this way and the guy going that way and you're through with a big hammer, you know what I mean? And they called that tangas and that, you know, and this was the guy who had hit it. And this German guy was walking about cursing, swearing, bashing him up and all that, you know. And of course the head of his chisel, it finally got burned over, you know, started hitting with a hammer all the time. And a bit of steel flew out of the chisel and hit this Russian guy and took his eye out. So, and he was really screaming around about that, and all the German, the Russian boys got on, pushed, go on, you know, laughing and chuckling, you know, because they had his eye taken out. So this poor kid didn't have to do, sort of fate done that for him.
It was the German that
did it together. The German got his eye taken out, yeah, and the Russian lad didn't have to, you know, it just happened to be that way. All these things, even when I tell my friends, it's hard to believe myself, they would, you know, get up.
So you'd be working there till dusk?
Yeah, yeah.
Back to the hood, Did you have, was there time for any kind of recreation, or were you just too tired, or what would you do when you...
Well, when you got back, it just flopped, and they had, for, if you want to go for a pee, you had a big tank thing to stand in there, you know, big barrel to it, and have a pee in all that best you could. You know.
So there wouldn't be, you wouldn't be like card games and, you know...
When you have a game of...
Darts, you know, other prisoners have talked about like making cards, you know, like making their own playing cards and making their own...
Well, not in Germany we didn't do it, because we're sort of working, seeing that, but you had, you made a concert party and things like that. And of course, one of the things that sticks in your mind was when you got inspected, when you had to drop your pants, they had to go and drop down and all that, you know. That was one of the skits and all that, and some guys had different things fixed up, you know, got a bit of string, different Charlie up and all that sort of thing, and that, you know, which is great fun. Now, you know, the Germans sent you there, more of a laugh and things like that.
So they would be invited to the turns?
Yeah, and the Germans sent you come and they had a good laugh, and that, you know. And that was part and parcel of it.
Were these the same gentlemen, I mean, you've talked about, you know, the bad treatment of the Russians. Would you find that you might have like a German that was very cruel to the Russians and was actually, you know, would be laughing with you kind of thing? Was it
not the same, the Germans that was with the Russians were with the Russians, and the same guys went with us. The guys what we had, I suppose they treated us as their equal, and they treated the Russians as if they were someone against them. Not the same guys that was with me, but guys that was with the Russians. They sort of had no time for the sort of thing. Might have been something you didn't add that, I don't know.
But did you pick up the language?
Well, the language was a get on, like I said a minute ago, they were talking about food and hungry and things like that. Because I remember one time I had a food parcel or something, and it was done up with string. And I had to go and ask the officer, the German officer, for to pay the service to cut the string or something like that. And he said, well, why don't you do it with your fingernails? Well, I see chewing fingernails at the time. So I says, so little food, next Essen, I've got to eat my fingernails for the dead grub. You know, that's, you know, so tight at Essen, that would be so little food from the Germans. This is food and that. And quite years ago that, and he cut a parcel out. But he wasn't a bad doorkeeper.
Were you able to, did they ever express their opinions on anything about the war, or they talk about the families or anything? Was there any kind of that kind
there
of
was some, there was some of the sent issues of being photographed their wives and kids and that sort of thing. And some of the guys would resent it, but it was okay. Yeah.
What was their morale like? I mean, did they?
Well, you see, they lived in a state of anxiety, because best part of the sentence you got were blokes who were disabled. But let's say disabled, I mean, they weren't fighting fit, as it were. I mean, had been wounded or shell shocked or whatever, or bad health. So the fit men that you and I would sort of have to be at the war. So consequently, they didn't want to get well. So they're all sort of a bit timid about getting sent to the Russian front, especially the Russian front.
Were you able to get, was there any news coming through at this camp? Were you,
no. The guys used to come round asking what it was like and how you were treated and things like that, you know.
Was that the Red Cross?
The Red Cross, yeah.
How often did they come round?
Not very often. But it just so happened that when they did come round, you had been getting some parcels and things like that, so that, you know.
How often would the parcels come then in Germany?
They come, I suppose, about 2 months or something like that, once again.
And did you have to share, did you have somebody you shared?
You probably got less than that, but then.
Did you have somebody you shared the past?
Oh, you had, oh yeah.
And who was that? Who was that in Germany?
Well, you say you and I being muckers sort of thing, and we'd share the parcel, you know. And you'd tick the thing, you know. You couldn't sort of have it, you know, when you've got a tennis spam. It had to be spot on, you know.
Did people have scales then? Other people have talked about homemade scales and things like that.
No, not, didn't have in Germany anyway. No, but, you know.
So who was your mother? Who was the person you shared with in Germany?
Well, that one I called Robert, Robbo called him. And when it comes to be sort of Bill Sykes, like as it were, to go on pension of food, where I would, not me individually, when the fellows who could go on pension food would come back with as much as they could, he would come with a little thing like this, which is perhaps with no consequence, sort of thing, like, you know, so, but he shared all yours, and, but he didn't resent the fact, because he was a good guy. And he apparently worked there for Smith's and Newsies and stuff, you know, the big one, you know.
Now you got your photograph taken in Germany. Can you just describe, like, so the two of you? And you seem to be in your work clothes.
The captain, there must have been one of the civilians or something that worked on the railway, and the keen photographer, and he thought about taking a picture. So Len and I said we'll get a picture taken and get sent over to my parents and that sort of thing. And must have given something to him. It was a cigarette or a bar of chocolate that I don't really know.
And he was a German?
He was a German, yeah.
Yeah.
And my father, no, yeah.
So how often were you able to write home? And how often did you get letters from home? Because I know they had like special cards and special...
We had special cards, yeah. I think myself, like, although my mum and dad sent parcels to us, I got reported. I never got the problem, but I used to get the letters, I think. And I remember writing to my dad and mum and saying, can you get a photograph taken? Because I find it difficult in trying to remember what you look like. And they sent a picture of me, of them to that I'd got specially taken. And I was quite impressed. I kept that one for something. I probably still got it still somewhere.
And the original of the photograph you got taken of yourself and your friend.
Oh yeah.
That's stamped on the back with your address.
That's the original one, as you see.
And could you just talk a little bit about your friend that's on the photograph?
Len, he was a good guy. He used to work with his friend, but there's nothing. He didn't do anything special at all. He's a good on there pinching the stuff and something like that, but he wasn't sort of an outstanding sort of funny sort of character and things like that. You know. We had one guy, something to do with a, can't think of his name now. He was a well educated sort of bloke.
And he's a what?
Well educated sort of chap. Mm-hmm. And he had something to do with a film business. The wardrobe side of it, I should think. You know, with the costumes and things like that, you know. And he was, like I say, well educated. I don't know what happened to him, but he got it okay with the rest of us, but you could tell it was sort of a different planet because, you know, the ordinary bookshelf sort of guy.
There's about 70 of you in this hut, you said earlier.
About?
You said there's about 70 of you in this hut.
Yeah.
Did it stay constant, this 70 men, and did some people move, join you and others leave, or was it always the same 70 men at the end of the war?
I think it was the same, yeah. Two died, I think one got hurt working on the railway, went blue or something, and he left us for somebody, he must have died, I suppose, in that building. And we got a couple of guys in the place.
Were any of your friends or colleagues from the DLI with you at this stage? Anybody, any of the old battalion? Or do you think you'd...
Well, Barney Munro and Mackay must be still. Because, like I said, as close as we were before we went abroad, or went to prison camp, we sort of went to different parts, different working camps and that, you know. And consequently, you picked with different guys. I picked with Bill Pardy and Rob Over, I went to a lot of different guys there. I can not get all of them doing DLIs over there. Must have been gunners or troopers or whatever they call them. Yeah.
Now, when you kind of look at your own, I mean, we're talking about 1943, 1944, What was your morale like as a group? Because you're in Germany, you didn't have the news from home. I assume the only news you would get would be via the Germans. So, what was your sense of how the war was going? You were like in the middle of nowhere.
Well, I always felt confident that we'd get back. I always felt confident that we'd see it sewn through and all that. And had a pact, you see, when you're feeling down, bless the lads, he said, cheer you up again. So you go up the doldrums and all that. So they wouldn't let you get it done. They weren't that way very long, otherwise you'd be in a race state and that, you know. But they said, cheer you up and that, you know, make you take the negative and all that. You know. One called Hurst, Snaggy Hurst and all that. He used to wear a funny old hat, the tatty old greatcoat and all that. You know. We were marching down towards the work and things like that, you know. He was short, passed to attention. And instead of my treasure, all doing a bit like John Cleese sort of walking at, you know. And we were laughing and things like that. And singing all the things.
What would you sing?
Well, the old Garvey songs, like, you know, like, hang out your wash and things like that, you know.
How did the Germans, I mean, you walking to work, so you're being Germans. Well, did
we used
they
to walk alongside, he was laughing and doing this and all that, you know. And of course, when they get to any part of the town, they made us shut up and try to behave themselves because they were being a bit too free with us and that.
Were you able to barter with the, I mean, you mentioned the photograph. Was there anything else you could?
Well, some guys bartered, but one time, it wasn't the case of barter one time. This was like a small holding we were at. And one time, the seventh Bill Parian was, got out. And we had worked it, we had barbed wire, and we had worked it out, we could lift the barbed wire up, pull it down, and climb over this. And what I had done then, I got all the potatoes, and I picked them up out of the ground, and put them in a heap, and covered the earth with earth, I don't know what they call that, that's done. And we went up there one time, quite sort of like a battle dress, and we put all the potatoes and all that, you know, in there. And put the earth back again, and okay, that, you know, yeah. So they had to climb down, and they put the wire back up again. Nobody knew what this is, potatoes and that. Pinched some of the people that were sort of in charge of this place, like, you know. That was nothing.
Now, when did you first become aware of, like, the Allied aircraft, the bombing raids? Was that always there when you were in charge?
Well, when we were working at the Falkenberg there on the railway, we had to run like hell when it was obviously on the bombing railway. Pretty obvious. So we used to run away as far as we could, make a few, pull the field away if we could, you know, and lie there till it was all over. And then you'd come back saying, oh, well, thank goodness we're all right and all that. But it never actually hit the place where we were working. You know. Which is really fortunate. Because you were cheering at the same time, so I wish you'd fuck it off, don't you?
And how many raids would there be, I mean, in it?
Well, there was a fair few, not terribly tremendous a lot, like, but quite a terribly few.
Do any incidents stand out from the raids?
Just that one I told you about a little while ago, when the suspect in that railway truck where I had the ammunition at one side, and the food with the eggs on there, and that's the one that really...
So that was the only incident?
Well, there was some bit further along the line, but they didn't put it interfere with us at all. But you could tell, as the war was getting nearer to the... could have been close, I suppose, really. You could tell the way they were behaving, like the sentries and things like that, you know.
How were they behaving? How did they change?
And I remember one of them, and he wasn't a bad guy, really, but a British sense of humour being a bit awkward and twisted, like. And he was telling when the British couldn't release us what to say to them to get them the offence, and that's it. Where you say, Tommy, you know that, you know. You say, give them a load of bad now to tell them, call them all the bees and the seas and whatever, and all that, you know. It was Bob's sense of humour, really, that, you know.
Did he believe what you were saying?
No, because there's one guy that was always effing all the time. And this court, this judge would say, hey, effer, you know, if you would use the word, you know. And I say, oh yeah, oh yeah. So it's no good time to say that word, and you got the take it by the petition again. You know. But everywhere you could think of what you said, what you, you know, it's a nasty sort of thing. That's it.
And so he read between the lines, you could say that he knew the war was lost.
Oh, you could.
About what time? How long did it? I mean, because you got there in late 43. When did the mood change? When did their mood change? Do you think?
Well, when we could see the German was it the River Elbe or something like that? There was some river there, and the Russians was coming one way, and the Americans was coming the other way, so they let us out, but the settlers come with us for their sake, as it were, as opposed to ours, you know. So they come with us like that, you know, and they want to get away from the Russians, pretty obviously, the Russians, the settlers in. So we got away, we escaped, as it were, but the settlers come with us, in a sense. And we walked towards the Americans. And when we got to the Americans, they were okay. They treated us really well, and all that, you know. And the Russians, we asked us what was the Germans says, oh, they weren't too bad, no, they weren't too bad, so must have looked upon them with a bit of deviancy. But what the other part was there to say, oh, he treated you. I remember one guy saying, oh, he was a real nasty bit of goods. Yeah, shoot him. I'm not going to shoot him. Well, I will. But he just shot the fellow, I guess, you know. That was, you know. But it never happened to the little clique I was with.
That was just the story that...
Just there. And we were there, we got a fair bit of food, a bit of pigs of us. On the way, two folk got picked up by the Americans, who broke into a little warehouse there. And I pinched some tins of meat, a fair-sized tin there. But as we got some kind of meat, whatever it was, nothing special. And I got there, and cigarettes, good place for hard known cigarettes. Because when we got the eggs and all that, and we come across some German people as well. You weren't allowed out the camp with the Americans, unless you had special permission. What's the word you use? So you grounded, as it were. But you could go out. If you had, see, the British Army, when you used to clean the rifles, they called, you had a bit of flannel, they called it 4x2 or something like that. Do you know what I'm talking about, dear? Mm-hmm. Well, that is, put that through your rifle to clean it. But for some reason, I had kept that in my wallet all the time during the war, the bit I had. And of course, when you got the American prison company, you weren't allowed out, you know, unless you had special permission. They all had to wear this. Well, I got this, so I was walking about outside, you see.
What did you put on it?
It's like a permission to go out, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. On parole, as it was, sort of thing, I suppose. And I could, or speak just a little bit of German, you know. And I saw this, I chat with this German girl, and she had a little girl with her, about two or three. So I felt a bit sorry for her, so I gave her probably a couple of tins of this meat that we had, like, because we were desperate for it and that, you know. And she started calling me Max, you know. Well, anyway, I got really friendly with her. And so went with Americans with her, and we're in a sort of a place, like a cafe or a back or restaurants away, but plenty, you know, and just the American soup was had far too much to drink. And he come to this girl, a pretty little girl, I had nothing at all to do with it. You know, second thing I told her, just wasn't up to it at the time. And he says to the girl, you'll come with me, you know. And she said, come on, you know. Oh, says, I'm with Max, you know. Would have worse than effect for Max. and